Good morning, everyone. Glad to be back. This week, we are presented with a very perplexing story, one that the Midrashim shed a lot of light on, but when we read the Pesukim, what's happening is not so readily clear. The Pasuk tells us that Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, that Yaakov is alone. This is before his meeting with Esav, and he is moving all of his things across a river, and since he's the one doing the moving, he's the last one left on the side of the river. And the Torah tells us that an Ish is there. We don't know who this Ish is, where he comes from, why he's there, but this Ish meets Yaakov, and Vayovik Ishimo, and Yaakov fights with him. They are engaged in a struggle, they're wrestling, Ad Alos HaShachar, until the morning. And they fight, and there's no clear winner, and then Yaakov's leg gets hurt, and then Yaakov ends up winning and gets the bracha. So we're given a lot of details, and yet we leave the story from a psukim perspective very confused. And I think the way the Mefarshim approach this story is by addressing two questions. One, who's the Malach? Who is he? Why is he here? What was he there for? Who sent him? And that's question number one. Question number two is, what's the point of the story? Is the point of the story for Yaakov? Or is there something that we, the reader, the Jewish people, are supposed to take away from this story? And there are three main approaches, three ways of approaching this event with Yaakov. The first is from the Pashtanim, those who read the Psukim in a very straightforward way. They don't try to complicate anything, and that's headlined by the Rashbam. The Rashbam has a very interesting approach. So, in source number one, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, the underlines, Ki Livroach Derech Acheres. Yaakov was trying to run away. Yaakov was terrified of Esav, so he wanted to run away. He didn't want to engage with this upcoming battle that he was going to have with Esav. So what was Hashem's response? Vayayavik Malach Imo. Hashem sent an angel to stop Yaakov Avinu from running away. So Yaakov's trying to run. The angel comes. God says, don't run away. So what happens? So why did Yaakov get hurt? So very simply speaking, Yaakov seems to be being punished. There seems to have been a lack of emunah, a lack of faith in Hashem, that Yaakov is being punished for. In the parsha, Yaakov has a discussion with Hashem. Yaakov says, I'm scared. I don't know what's going to happen. Hashem says, don't worry about it. I got you covered. I'll protect you. You're going to go through Esav. It'll be fine. And then Yaakov says, but I don't know. Are my merits enough to hold up against Esav? And Yaakov is clearly afraid. And according to the Rashbam, he runs away. And he was punished for that. And this is like a very neat reading of the Psukim. Everything fits together nicely. And this is a slightly different angle, but the same general approach is in the Chizkuni, in source number two, that the reason why Yaakov was only injured in this very minor way was because lo haya lo rishus lahaziko. This angel, this Ish, who was sent to stop Yaakov from running away, did not have permission to do anything more than hurt his leg. Ela shalcho HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God sent this angel, this malach, lechazek ulevarcho, to strengthen and to bless Yaakov. This was for Yaakov's benefit. So, of course, the malach's not going to kill Yaakov for this. It wasn't a severe punishment. But mikol makom hiziku ma'at lehodio shehu malach. But the malach still wanted to show Yaakov that this was a message from Hashem. And that message was going to be a little bit painful. And he was going to hurt Yaakov's leg, the Gid HaNasha. But at the end of the day, this was a bracha for Yaakov.
So why even end the story when he said, like, bless me, and he didn't want to, and he was holding on to him, and he didn't want to let him go into the money. If the malach was there to bless him, he should have just blessed him. It seems like the way Rashi quotes other sources that he really, the malach didn't want to bless him.
Excellent. Yes. I think that is probably the one of the bigger holes that is not addressed by this approach. That we're given a lot of details, just to summarize the question. The Rashbam is saying, Malach was sent to stop Yaakov from running away, and he had to hurt him a little bit as like a punishment. But the overall message was to be mechazik Yaakov and to bless Yaakov. So then what's the whole back half of the story? When Yaakov and the angel are going back and forth, tell me your name, I don't want to have your name, give me the bracha, I have to, Malach saying I have to go. What's that whole back and forth? We're not really getting any of that according to this approach. For sure. Yes.
Oh, one sec. You said you were spot.
In line with this approach of the Pashtanim,
Refuah
Shleima.
You said Refuah Shleima, right?
Is the Rambam. The Rambam and those who follow in his path understood that we are being told the story of Yaakov and the angel and the Malach for just the purpose of their interaction, but the fight never really happened in reality. This was a nevuah. This was a message from Hashem, similar to the Chizkuni, that presumably this message was to be a chizuk, was to tell Yaakov that don't worry, everything is going to be okay. And this is generally a position of the Rambam, that whenever we have interactions between people and angels, it didn't happen in real life. The Rambam says it always happens when they're in a nevuah, it's in some sort of dream or a vision. That's what happens with the angels and Avram Avinu in Parshas Vayera. It's what happens with the angels and Lot by Sodom. It's always going to be in a nevuah.
It's always going to be what?
A nevuah, a prophecy, in a vision. Meaning that the people don't actually interact with the angels, but it's happening in a spiritual place, in a vision.
Thank you.
The big question on this approach of the Rambam is Yaakov limps out of this scene. Yaakov is clearly physically hurt. So how can you say that it was just a nevuah, that it was just a prophecy and a vision, this fight with the Malach? He's clearly injured. And interestingly enough, the Abarbanel, in source number 4, points out that we often have things in dreams that have physical manifestations. He says you can have a dream of a person falling from a great height, and they are dreaming that their arms and legs are flailing, they're falling, and then they wake up. Why did they wake up? Because there was some involuntary twitch. Their legs were shaking, their arms were shaking. So says the Abarbanel, sometimes you can have a situation where dreams or visions and a nevuah, a prophecy, can all be taking place inside a person's head, but it can have a physical manifestation. So that's just how the Abarbanel addresses this problem for the Rambam, that if we really think that this whole story was all a nevuah, was all a vision, so then how did he get hurt? Barbanel says, don't worry. It's not so crazy to think that while Yaakov was having a prophetic dream, his leg would have had, he could have had a physical impact from the dream. So now we have to address the same question that we addressed for the Rashbam of, well, what was the point of the nevuah? So the Radak sheds a little bit of light on this question. And the Radak says that, similar, again, to the Rashbam, this Yaakov is being punished here as a chisaron. There was a lack of his emunah and bitachon. There was a lack in the faith that Yaakov had from Hashem. And he explains that it actually works out very nicely, according to the Rambam, the mode of punishment. He says, what was Yaakov's chait? What was the sin that Yaakov did? He didn't have enough emunah. His thoughts that he had, they were leading to improper actions. He was running away from the scene. He wasn't facing Esav like he was supposed to. He was running away. So says the Radak, Hashem said, I'm going to have you have a machshava, a vision, and then I'm going to have you have negative physical consequences because of that. I am going to make sure, says Hashem, that when you wake up from this dream, your leg is, exactly, you can't run away. Your leg is going to be hurt. So that's how the Radak explains that, again, this is a punishment for Yaakov's lack of emunah. So I would summarize this as general approach number one, that this story between Yaakov and the Malach, the primary purpose of the story is we're having a discussion about Yaakov Avinu. He was having an interaction with Esav. He was afraid. He was going to run away. And Hashem was telling Yaakov, don't run away. Hashem says, I'm with you. You're going to be fine. And holds him to task to make sure that he understands this message. And that's why he ends up being hurt. Approach, the second broad approach to addressing this conflict between Yaakov and the Ish is the based off of the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Aleph Amid Aleph. It's a short one-liner in the Gemara, but the Rishonim run with it. The Gemara is discussing the word Vayeyavek, that Vayeyavek Ish Imo, that Yaakov and Esau, Yaakov and the Malach have this struggle. So Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Milamid, this teaches us Shehelu Avak, Miraglosam, the dirt, the dust from their struggle went up at Kisei HaKavod. That the dust from the struggle between Yaakov and this Ish went to the Kisei HaKavod. Very, very obscure statement. But what all the Rishonim understand this to mean is that this struggle between Yaakov and Esav, or Yaakov and the Malach, was not limited to that physical point in time. But it was a remez, it was a hint, it was symbolic of the struggles that will take place for the rest of history. And as we've seen throughout the last thousands of years, the struggle between Yaakov, the Jewish people, and Esav, and Edom, and those nations of the world that are trying to hurt us and that are trying to stop us from doing our job on this world. And that is why many of the Midrashim identify this Ish as the sorrow shel Esav, as the Malach, the spiritual force that represents what Esav represents. And they identify him with the Satan, or with Samael, which is basically evil with a capital E. That what we're describing, according to this Gemara, is the eternal struggle between good and evil, between Yaakov and Esav, between the two polar opposites, and how their struggle will happen beginning in Parshas Vayishlach, but will continue to happen throughout Jewish history. And the Mefarshim take away two types of lessons from this comparison. There are some that understand this struggle to be a roadmap for the Jewish people. What are things, what are trends that we can take from this story of Yaakov and Esav? And we will find them throughout history. That's option number one. And other Rishonim take the route of, let's learn how to deal with that struggle. Let's learn how to deal with this fight that's being outlined in the Parsha. So the Ramban is probably the springboard. He's one of the first to really tackle this approach. And he says that this is the meaning of the entire event, of this entire fight between Yaakov and Esav. It is a remez lidorosav. It is a hint, it is a symbol to future generations that there will be times where Esav will in fact overpower Yaakov. Just like in the story with the Malach, sometimes Esav will hit the Gidon Asha, and there will be damage to the Jewish people, and will overpower Yaakov to the extent of almost uprooting his seed, almost destroying the entirety of the Jewish people. And this happened during the times of Rabbi Huda ben Bava, as expressed by the Medrash. The Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, if someone were to tell me to give up my life, al kiddush Hashem, to sanctify God's name, says Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, I would do it, no problem, provided they killed me immediately. Just don't do what they did in the Dor Shel Shmad, the generations of religious persecution, because that was terrible. So what was that?
Terrible torture.
And the example that's quoted in this medrash in Shir HaShirim, they would take iron balls, heat them to exceedingly hot temperatures till they were white hot balls of iron, and then take those fiery like iron balls and put them on the Jewish people, and that would be their method of torture. So says Rav Chiya Bar Abba, that's too far. And that's the Medrash in Shir HaShirim. Concludes the Ramban, the last line on source 7. In fact, there were times where they did this to us, says the Ramban. In the times of the Ramban, in the times where Jews in Spain, and later on the Ramban did not know this, but in Germany later on, these types of things happen all too often to the Jewish people. But the Ramban adds one line, and I think it's so powerful, just to give us some perspective, just to frame this story. Because it's not just a story of doom and gloom. The struggle between Yaakov and Esav is not, oh, we fight with Yaakov and Esav, we have this struggle. Sometimes we're winning, sometimes they're winning, and it's awful. But the last few words, Hakol Savalnu, we were able to bear it all. The Avar Aleinu. There were times in this thought, we always persevere, and it passes. The Avar Aleinu. And eventually, we come out on the other side, as the story with Yaakov concludes, Kemosha Remez, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem, that Yaakov ends up from this story, Shalem, complete and whole. So the Ramban is understanding that this struggle between Yaakov and Esav is a roadmap for our own, the Jewish people's experience through Galus. There are times that are bad. There are times that are really bad. Like when Yaakov got his get on Asha, there are times that the Jewish people are really going to be on the low end of the scale in our struggle, in our balance with Esav. But ultimately, it's a story of hope, of Hakol Savalnu, that everything ends up being okay. And that is, I think, the most useful framework of viewing the story. And now we just want to try to tease out some other lessons that we can take away. In source number 8, and I think the heading got cut off on the bottom of page 3, but this is the Ksav Sofer, and he says that we should look at the word Vayeyavek. And Rashi, when explaining what that word means and describing the nature of the struggle between Yaakov and the Ish and the Saro Shel Esav, so Rashi gives us two options. Apologize for the print. But if we look at the last line of the first paragraph, so he quotes Rashi, that Lashon Avak is Mala Afar Baragleim Al Yidei Nanuim, that they were fighting, they were shaking about, it was violent, and that violence was what was causing this cloud of dust to appear. And the second understanding is Oshechavku V'avku Bizarosam. Their arms were interlocked, almost like a wrestling, but like they're intertwined with each other. And that was the nature of the fighting. So why is that significant? So the Ksav Sofer has a brilliant explanation. He says there are two ways that Esav tries to overcome Yaakov. There are two tactics that the nations of the world have to try to overcome us. He says the first is the obvious one, when there's violence. When you have the Mala Afar Baragleim, you have this fight, it's clear. They're out to get us, it's murder, it's violence. Those things are clear. That's option number one. However, he says we have to be aware, and this is one of the lessons we learn from the story of Yaakov and Esav, is that sometimes they come and they want to interlock arms with us. And Esav tells the Jewish people, come, we'll be nice to you, come join our cultures, come join our communities, assimilate with us, it'll be fine, we're going to be nice to you.
It's like in Shechem, the people in the story, the hot mess.
Exactly. Shleim Hemitanu says Shechem, come dwell with us, you'll live together with us, it'll be great. But ultimately, that is in almost a more dangerous form it ends up starting off a little bit nicer. But if we look throughout Jewish history, when the Jewish people get a little bit too comfortable with their assimilation in cultures, not expulsions follow not too far after. So again, similar to the Ramban, the Ksav Sofer is looking for roadmaps and trends and how we can identify and work our way through Galus. We learn the story of Yaakov and Esav, and we can say that is exactly what's happening in our times. The final, I think, lesson that I want to take away from this approach of learning from the eternal struggle, of understanding the story of Yaakov and Esav, and then applying that to the Jewish experience in Galus, is a very interesting nitziv in source number 10. The nitziv says that this punishment of Yaakov when he gets his Gid Hanasha injured, Ubalalam Denu, says the nitziv, this comes to teach us Eich lehisnahig im miskomamav, how we, the Jewish people, are supposed to interact with those who come up against us. Shelo lehischar imaim biyoser. We shouldn't be overly combative. We shouldn't take things too far. V'kasher yasur hapachad. Once the threat is once we've dealt with the threat, ra'i lehaniach es harodef leilech ledarko. We should allow the conflict to be over. Ubaha osalza. So according to the Nitziv, and I don't know if this is necessarily pshat in the psukim, but the Nitziv says that after the initial stalemate between Yaakov and the Malach, so it says lo yacholo, there was no clear winner, and then behei of koimo, while they're still fighting, the Malach hits Yaakov's leg. So the Nitziv says the Malach, after the initial stalemate, was ready to leave. He was ready to say, all right, I can't win, I'll go home, forget about it. But according to the Nitziv, Yaakov pushed through. Yaakov said, no, we're fighting, I'm going to take this further. And once Yaakov voluntarily continued the fight, that was when the Malach was able to injure him. So, and he says that is symbolized by the Gid, the Gid Hanasha is a sinew, and they're very tough. So he says what we learn from the Gid Hanasha, that it was specifically that limb of Yaakov that was injured, that a person should not be kasha kigid, a person should not be tough and stubborn. And the punishment was that Yaakov didn't back down once the threat had disappeared. And I think this is very interesting, because to me at least, it's clear that there's a balance. That one could read this and say, if you're fighting with someone, once you've quote-unquote won the fight, then walk away. But I think it's clear, and we've seen this throughout Jewish history, that there needs to be, you need to make sure the threat is actually disappeared. I think that's one important caveat in this nitziv. That while the nitziv is saying there needs to be an aversion to conflict, that the Jewish people should not be voluntarily joining in a conflict, but we have to make sure that the threat is actually gone first. And once that threat has been eliminated, so then we take this lesson of Yaakov. So to summarize, I know I'm saying a lot of different approaches within this one approach, but to summarize, we have two broad approaches so far to the fight between Yaakov and Esav. We have the Pashtanim, those who took the story at face value. We have those who think the story happened. It happened in reality as a punishment for Yaakov's lack of emunah. And you have the Rambam, that it was a nevuah, but the same idea, that there was a nevuah from Hashem saying, I'm with you, don't worry, and Yaakov is being injured because of this lack of faith. Approach number two, headlined by the Ramban, takes a more global approach, that it is not just about the fight between Yaakov and Esav, whether it happened, whether it didn't. The Ramban is not even addressing that. It is a roadmap, it is a symbol, it is Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. The things that happened to the Avos in Bereishis are symbols to what will happen and continue to happen to the Jewish people throughout history, and lessons that we can take away from that comparison. The last approach that I really wanted to focus on, and I was so confused by these sources when I first encountered them, and I really think that there's one more avenue that we can take based off of these sources. The Tanhuma has a medrash that this angel sent by God was Michael. Michael, who is one of the angels of mercy, the Malachi Rachamim. And the Medrash just leaves it at that. Just says, yeah, Hashem saw that Yaakov was scared and he was about to fight Esav, so he sent a Malach Rachamim to fight with him, Michael. And I read that source and I said, Malach Rachamim, so why are you hurting? Why are you fighting? Like, there was a total disconnect between Rachamim and the fight, and then just a total lack of follow-up by the Medrash to explain the story. So I think this Targum Yonasan, source 11, is addressing this approach, that it was really Michael, a Malach of Rachamim, that was coming to Yaakov. So the Targum Yonasan says, and the Targum Yonasan is a Targum, similar to Unkelus. He's a translation of the Torah. However, from time to time, he'll go beyond the strict translation of the words, and he'll just add in a ton of extra information. One example of that is this pasuk here, this Targum Yonasan, where on the pasuk of Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, on this pasuk of Yaakov being left alone, so the Torah, he explains, Yaakov remained alone, and an angel contended with him in the likeness of a man. And he said to him, have you not promised to give tenth of all that is yours? Yaakov promised to give Miser. When Yaakov was leaving his father's house in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, he has his dream of the ladder by Har Moriah, and he says, Hashem, if you make sure that I'm safe, if I get through Lavan and I'm good and you get me home, I'll give you Miser. I'll give a tenth of everything that I have to Hashem. I'll dedicate it to Hashem. So this angel, and again, this is not on the Psukim, but the Targum Yonasan is offering us this information. The angel says, have you not promised to give a tenth of all that is yours? Behold, you have 10 sons and a daughter, and not one of them has been offered to Hashem. Immediately, what does Yaakov do? He sets aside the 4 Bechoros. He sends aside the 4 firstborns of the 4 Imahos. And then he gets to Levi, and he offers Levi to Hashem. Not literally as a sacrifice, but he commits Levi to the service of God, to the service of Hashem. Michael answered and said, Lord of the world, Levi, this is yours. Levi, you're going to Hashem. And on account of these things, he remained from God with Yaakov. And I think there still are a lot of details missing, but I think what this source adds is that Michael is being sent, this angel is being sent to Yaakov to fight with him, yes, but also to spur Yaakov into action. He is telling him, there is something you still need to do, Yaakov, before this fight. You're nervous, Yaakov? There's something you still need to do. There's a meister, there's a commitment you need to have. And the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar expounds on this just a little bit more. And the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says, and just to, it connects some of these dots. Ma asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does Hashem do when he sees that Yaakov is scared? Shalach lo malach lehoshio ulahatzilo. He sends him a malach, he sends him an angel to save him, Miyad Esav. Shenemer vayavik ishimo. As the pasuk says, and the man, the angel, fought with him. So again, we're faced with the same question. If you're sending the malach to save him, as the malach arachamim, so why are they fighting? So he goes through the same discussion. You didn't give your miser. And the Yaron Michael, the end of the source, that Michael comes down, and he takes Levi and he brings it to Hashem. And that is what acts as the protection for Yaakov. So I think I would like to suggest, and I I don't have a clear source for this, but what I think comes out of these of this approach of that it wasn't Saro Shel Esav. This wasn't a conflict between good and evil per se. This was, in reality, a bracha. It was a bracha to Yaakov. Hashem said, I'm going to help you out. But I think the lesson we're learning from this, and it also addresses the question of why is Yaakov being hurt? And I think it's because Hashem is asking for the commitment. And commitments are oftentimes sacrifices. And they're painful. And they may, in fact, result in a Gid HaNasha-like response where there's, like, a really... It's painful. And that may be signified by offering up Levi to service of God. That Yaakov had to, in a certain way, Yaakov had to part with Levi and say that you're being separated from the rest of your brothers. You're being offered a service to Hashem. But at the same time, the opportunity that was being offered to Yaakov was invaluable. He was being offered the opportunity that if he took advantage of it, which he did, then now he has a malach at his side. He has Michael, a malach of rachamim, to fight with him, to be by his side, to be mechazik, to strengthen him. All Yaakov had to do was seize that opportunity. So the fight that happens between Yaakov and the Malach may not have been a wrestling match. It may have been simply Michael coming in and like poking Yaakov in the ribs and saying, hey, you still need to do something. You're scared. You don't think your merits will hold up to Esav, but you're not done yet. Hashem, you committed something. So that fight, that conflict between Yaakov and the Malach was Hashem's way of reminding Yaakov, and through sacrifice, through something that may not have been comfortable and may have been painful, but if you seize that opportunity, then you can achieve a lot of bracha. And I think that if we are to kind of take all of these lessons together of the approaches of the conflict and focus not just on the fact that there was a fight between Yaakov and whoever this Ish was, whether it was a Malach of Rachamim, or whether it was, as the simple Midrashim state, the Saro Shel Esav, that it is a blueprint for Galus, but also for each and every one of us when we encounter struggles, when we encounter things that are scary, when we encounter Saros in our lives and Hashem Yirachem on everything that's going on right now, that oftentimes we are given opportunities to sacrifice, opportunities to stretch ourselves a little bit in healthy ways and in ways that are clearly God-driven to sacrifice and to commit. And it's not easy, but when Hashem presents us with those opportunities, and those, while they seem like a fight, they seem like a struggle between the Vayavi Kishimo, but in reality, they are opportunities for bracha. And just to go back to the Ramban, because I really think that it's a powerful message to conclude with, that ultimately, when we do capitalize on the bracha, and when we do connect to our role as the Jewish people and understand that this we are part of history, we're part of an eternal struggle between Yaakov and Esav. So ultimately, as the Ramban says, Hakol Savalnu, things pass. We're part of a trend of history, things happen, and when we can really capitalize on the bracha and strengthen our commitment to Hashem, eventually, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem, everything works out for the best.